morning, everyone. It was plenty easy to crack lots of gags when I was interviewing Michelle because I wasn't the one answering the questions. It's a different ball game today. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be back here at the Australian Business Economist's Annual Forecasting Conference. I'm looking really forward to another great ABE event. I can't really vouch for the first speaker, but the rest of the program looks great. Now, for full disclosure, I think this will be a great event, but I am a committee member from the ABE, so I might be a little bit biased. Now, today's theme is macro meets machine. Love it. It sort of sounds like an economist version of Terminator, maybe. Now, I'd put myself more in the former category of macro as opposed to machine, and that's fortunate because that means today my role is to actually set the scene and discuss recent economic developments in Australia and the economic outlook as seen by the RBA. In case you forget who I am. So a key development in the Australian economy has been the unexpected pickup in inflation since mid last year. So drawing on our analysis and forecasts in the February statement on monetary policy, the questions that I'm going to focus on today are, what were the drivers of the unexpected strength in activity and pickup in inflation in the second half of last year? And to what extent are these likely to dissipate in the near term or persist over the forecast period? Now, in short, we assessed that much of the pickup in inflation in the second half of last year was due to some sector-specific price pressures that we expect to dissipate in coming quarters. But overall growth in demand also looks to have been stronger than expected in the second half of last year, adding to existing economy-wide capacity pressures and therefore inflation. So consequently, our forecast for inflation over the coming year have been revised higher. Now, the February forecasts assume a higher path for the cash rate over the forecast period, consistent with financial market pricing. Now, alongside the unwinding of some temporary drivers of demand, this higher cash rate path is expected to constrain growth in overall demand and bring the economy close to balance by the end of the forecast period. Now, of course, this is subject to considerable uncertainty, and as always, there are risks around the central forecast. So in terms of what happened in the second half of last year, let's start with what we, as in the RBA, were thinking around 6 months ago. So there's a fair bit going on in this graph, so I'll just explain it so when I talk through it, you'll know. So let's just focus on the trim mean as our preferred measure of underlying inflation. What this series shows is actual trim mean inflation. That's the black bit. Now the blue line is what our forecasts were back in August of last year. So you can see underlying inflation staying pretty steady and pretty close to the midpoint of the 2-3% range. The grey areas around that are the range of market sector economists that we survey each quarter, so that those forecasts were produced around the same time as ours. And then the pink lines are just our most recent forecasts. So just so you've got a clear picture of what's going on as I talk through them. So if we go back to mid-2025, underlying inflation in Australia had been easing gradually from its peak in late 2022, reaching 2.7% in the June quarter of 2025. Now, that was consistent with some easing in capacity pressures as the early period of restrictive monetary policy helped to bring aggregate demand and potential supply closer to balance. Now, back then, in mid-2025, while GDP growth had been picking up alongside a recovery in real household incomes, it was still below its estimated potential growth rate. So capacity pressures were projected to ease further. So demand is growing more slowly than the supply potential of the economy, so that's reducing some of those capacity pressures that we were facing. So given that that was the case, capacity pressures were projected to ease further, and our central forecast back in the August statement was for the unemployment rate to pick up slightly further and for underlying inflation to ease a little further in the second half of 2025, such that the economy would be close to balance and underlying inflation close to the midpoint. So you can see it there. You might refer to those as Goldilocks forecasts. Turns out that was true, because the forecasts weren't. So exactly as I said then, our forecast didn't come true. What did we observe instead? Instead, there was a material increase in inflation in the second half of 2025. So over the year to December quarter, headline inflation went up to 3.6%, and underlying trim mean inflation was 3.4%. Right. Now, we had expected a sharp sort of rebound in headline inflation as the effects of electricity rebates were unwound. But we and others, you can see there, were surprised by both the extent and the breadth of pickup in inflationary pressures. So just to focus on that right panel, you can see that black tick up from mid-2025, how far above that was above it, the RBA forecasts and the market economists that we survey. So it was a material miss. The other thing about it was the breadth of inflationary pressures. Doesn't want to let me move. There we go. It's probably going to jump 6 points. Okay. So this one shows, look, it takes all the items in the consumer price index and basically says, all right, how many of them are increasing by more than 2.5%? And if you do that, you can do that by weight, because some items will have a bigger weight in the basket than others, or you can just do it by the number of them. Either way, you look at that mid-2025 period, and you can see that after the breadth of price pressures having come off quite a lot since that peak in late 2022, they've started to reemerge again. So it's quite a broader story than any particular sector. So let's go into that a bit more. What were the drivers of the unanticipated increase in inflation? Now, our assessment, as I said before, is that a large part of the unexpected increase was due to some sector-specific demand and pricing pressures, much of which we expect to dissipate in coming quarters. But we do think there also appears to be greater capacity pressures in the economy than we had expected. So I'm going to discuss those in turn, the sector-specific explanations, and then turn to the broader capacity pressures. So on the sector-specific explanations, so some of the pickup in inflation in the second half of 2025 was driven by increases in the prices of travel and fuel, which tend to be volatile, right? And we expect the prices of these items to ease in early 2026. But in addition to those volatile items, some of the unanticipated pickup in inflation in the second half of 25 looks to have been driven by pricing dynamics in the housing and retail sectors. Now, some of that relates to broader demand conditions as well. So it is quite difficult to separate sector-specific things from the broader demand conditions. We're sort of doing it here, I guess, in some ways for heuristic benefits. So let's think about the housing sector. So the mid-2025 picked up, but let's go back a little further into late 2024 and early 2025. Now, our liaison contacts in residential building industry in some states were noting that soft demand growth had led home builders to charge lower prices than otherwise. Basically, they increasingly resorted to discounting and promotions to increase sales. As demand for new homes picked up, home builders reported that they were dialing back on the discounts and promotions. That was the second part of last year. So the late 24 to 25, quite a bit of discounting going on. Now, similarly, in the second half of 2025, fewer liaison contacts in the retail sector reported the need to discount as heavily, noting that demand conditions had improved somewhat alongside efforts to control costs or change their product mix. So a similar sort of story in retail as well. Okay, so in the early 2025, there's relatively weak demand conditions for retailers, so there's a lot of discounting going on. As demand picks up through the second half, they start to, we're getting less reports now of that discounting taking place. So it's possible that these dynamics were then pushing down on aggregate inflation in late 24 and the first half of 2025, but then subsequently accentuating the pickup in aggregate inflation in the second half of 2025 as those effects unwound. So there's some of the sector-specific things that we're pointing to. Let's think now, though, about the economy-wide capacity pressures. So greater capacity pressures in the labour market and the economy more broadly than we had previously assessed also look to have contributed to the unexpected pickup in inflation. Now, We use a range of models, price and labour indicators, business surveys and other data to make our assessment about the degree of capacity pressures in the economy. But there, you know, there's a significant uncertainty around this assessment given the dispersion in what these indicators tell us. I mean, we don't observe it. You know, there's no variable that says, here's the supply capacity of the economy, right? Here's aggregate demand and here's the difference between them. Right? We don't have that, so we have to try and estimate these things. So we use a whole range of factors. So what we've seen then is that in addition to the increase in consumer price inflation over the second half of last year, a number of indicators of capacity pressures picked up, such as business survey measures of capacity utilization, that's the one on this graph here, and also survey measures of the share of firms reporting labour as a constraint on output. So you can see that quite here. So the capacity utilization series is the orangey coloured one there. So the pickup in trim mean inflation there, that's from the June quarter, that turnaround. So you can see that the measures of capacity utilization started to turn just a little bit before that. And they increased and they sort of stabilised a little bit now. So that sort of tells us, you know, relative to where we were back in mid-2025, there actually now are broader capacity pressures in the Australian economy. Another point just to note on that as well, in terms of there's capacity utilisation, if you looked at other measures of inflationary pressures in the economy at this point, so things like growth in unit labour costs, they remained elevated as well. So this, how do we explain this change in assessment of capacity pressures? You know, we thought mid last year we weren't quite there, but we thought the economy's getting close to balance, but now we're in a situation where we really think that there are clearer signs of excess demand in the economy. So how do we explain that? Well, it's about demand and supply. Well, demand picked up by more than we thought. I'll discuss that first. But also potential supply looks to have been a little lower than our previous estimates had suggested. So both those things, demand picking up faster than we thought and the possibility that there was less supply capacity in the Australian economy than we thought, both of those things had been flagged as risks in the August 2025 Statement on Monetary Policy, and it seems that those risks have materialised. So let's dig a bit deeper into the surprising strength in demand in the second half of 2025. So in mid-2025, we assessed that while the economy had been growing at a below trend or below potential rate for some time, there were still capacity pressures in the economy. Now, we won't receive the December quarter national accounts until next week, but our latest nowcast is that GDP growth over the second half of 2025 was a bit above our estimates of potential growth and higher than we had expected in the August forecasts. So the components of demand, some of them will reflect this graph here in a minute. So what this graph shows is the RBA's, our forecasts. The blue dots are what we were thinking would be the outcomes for year-ended growth in these things back in August, but the February ones are what we're thinking now. Okay. So in those February ones, we have the September quarter data already, and we have some partials for the December quarter. So you can see here from the very left-hand side here that GDP growth, the blue dot, that's what we expected in August. What we're expecting now is higher than that. Okay. So it looks like GDP growth is stronger, or is going to be stronger than we had anticipated mid last year. Now, specifically growth in consumption, you can see it there. So anywhere that the pink bar is above the blue dot, that means things are looking stronger than expected. So consumption, household consumption, stronger than expected. Business investment, dwelling investment, exports and imports. Right? So the only thing that's not in that thing is public demand, which is coming, looks to be coming in a bit weaker than expected. And of course, with that sort of strength in demand, if you get a stronger growth in domestic demand than we anticipated, some of that is met by imports, and that is part of the story there for why growth in imports was stronger than expected. All right, so let's dig deeper into that then. What were the drivers of the unanticipated strength in domestic private demand in the second half of 2025? So there are several interrelated candidates here. So first, the global economy has proven more resilient than thought, and I guess importantly that the downside risk of a large external shock to the Australian economy did not eventuate in the second half of last year. For example, average US tariff rates have been much lower than was initially projected. If you think back to Liberation Day last year. So the average rates have been lower than as projected, as for example, as tariff exemptions on for various countries or goods, the rapid reconfiguration of trade flows and supply chains last year. Those things all help to mitigate the negative impacts of the increase in trade barriers. Now, more recently, and in the spirit of today, strong trade flows related to AI and the technology boom have also supported activity among some of our major trading partners. So for a small open economy like ours, these better global conditions have supported growth in domestic export in exports and domestic incomes. So second, domestic financial conditions might have been less restrictive than we had assessed. Financial conditions are inherently difficult to measure, and no one metric provides a definitive picture. But in hindsight, I think maybe the robust credit growth observed over 2025 and the extent of the pickup in private demand growth in the second half of the year raises the possibility that conditions were less restrictive than we'd previously assessed, particularly following the monetary policy easing in Australia in 2025. Also, there was very low risk premia in global funding markets related to the resilience of the global economy. That may have contributed to some additional easing in overall domestic financial conditions. Third, and in addition to those two factors of the global economy and financial conditions, stronger than expected real household incomes and wealth contributed to the stronger than expected pickup in household consumption in the second half of the year. Now, that said, part of that strength in we saw in the second half of 2025 in household consumption, we judge that to have been a bring forward of expenditure in response to sales and promotional activities in the December quarter. So we do think there is some underlying strength there for consumption, but we think some of it was a bring forward, and you'll see some unwind of that early this year. Now, dwelling investment also picked up by more than anticipated. Now, probably most people in this room would know that dwelling investment is relatively sensitive to changes in interest rates, both directly and also via higher housing prices, which also increased by more than we expected last year. But it is worth noting, I think, that leading indicators of dwelling investment, such as building approvals, they had actually started to increase prior to the first cash rate reduction in 2025. So that may have reflected factors such as, you know, expectations of monetary policy easing. It could have been earlier strong population growth and earlier easing in capacity constraints in the construction sector. And finally, much of the unanticipated pickup in business investment in the September quarter was related to data center fit-outs. So this grows. This is business investment for the Australian economy, year-ended growth, just decomposing that into various things. The bit I want you to look at, this goes to this is actual data, no forecasts in here to the September quarter. The data centers is those orangey colored bars, and you look at the very end bar down there, you can just see how big that contribution of data center and fit outs was to overall business investment towards the end of the year. Now, this sort of data center fit outs and things, that type of expenditure is mostly imported and it can be lumpy. So we don't expect increases of this magnitude to continue in coming quarters. But that said, some of the recent strength in business investment is expected to be maintained in the near term. So according to the latest capital expenditure survey and our liaison contacts, firms have recently upgraded their investment plans, especially in areas like utilities, energy, data centers, and related technology, as well as non-res construction more broadly. So now I just want to briefly, this is meant to be blank, by the way. Just talk about the economy's supply side. And the fact that it's actually, we've revised that our assessment of the economy supply potential, we revised a bit lower relative to last year. So our assessment is that the intensification in capacity constraints in the second half of last year was primarily driven by the unanticipated strength in private demand. Right? We think that's the main driver. But recent data suggests that maybe supply capacity is also a bit lower than we had assumed. So if you go back to the August statement, our central forecast for inflation back then incorporated a modest degree of downward judgment relative to what our models suggested. And so what was our thinking there? Well, if you look back to that time, you had underlying inflation data in late 24 and the first half of 25 had moderated, you know, and in year-end terms were at 2.7%, right, at that point. Indicators of capacity pressures from business surveys, such as the capacity utilization series I showed before, and availability of labour. You could see that those had all come down and were heading towards suggesting that aggregate demand and potential supply were heading back towards balance. Now, at the time, we were attuned to risks that capacity pressures might be greater than we had incorporated in the inflation forecasts. For example, there were other signs in the economy, like growth in unit labour costs was elevated at that time. So that's what that was the thinking around that time. But you get to mid-2025, you know, inflation picks up, the survey measures have picked up, growth in unit labour costs remains elevated. So consequently, we removed that downward judgment. It was a modest downward judgment on the inflation profile that we removed that in the November statement of monetary policy. And then Wilson just made a small further downward revision to supply capacity in the February statement. So we continue to refine our estimates of the economy's supply potential. It's a tricky exercise to do that, and it's an imprecise science. But we'll continue to refine as more data become available. Now, there is a risk there could be even more labour market tightness than we've assessed. Model-based estimates of the economy's supply potential, as they have for some time, our staff estimates, they still point to some more capacity pressures than we have in those forecasts. So where to from here? So our outlook for domestic growth, the labour market and inflation was discussed in the February SMP. So for the year ahead, the forecasts for activity and inflation are stronger than previously expected, largely reflecting that recent strength in private demand and inflation. But it's important to note, as I said before, that the February forecasts assume a higher path now for interest rates relative to the November forecasts. And that's consistent with the change in financial market expectations for the cash rate. And another important difference is the higher exchange rate now as well. So those things, the higher profile that we assume in our forecast plus the higher exchange rate, we forecast that they will contribute to a slowing in GDP growth from late 2026 back again, so GDP will be growing below its potential rate, which should help ease capacity pressures. So then if that all works out, inflation would be expected to peak mid this year before moderating to a little above the midpoint of the 2 to 3% range by mid-2028 as the economy returns to balance. Now that's the central forecast. That assumes that much of those recent sector-specific inflationary pressures that I was talking about will dissipate in coming quarters. For example, as the recent and assumed increases in the cash rate constrain demand for new housing, that might take some of the heat out of that. And also that broader capacity in the pressures in the economy will subsequently ease then as GDP growth slows from later this year. Now, as I've mentioned, we may be misjudging how quickly some of these sector-specific inflationary pressures will wane as demand slows. It's a difficult thing to disentangle the sort of what's going to be more or less persistent. So maybe we should be taking more signal from the recent strength in inflation and the ongoing weakness in productivity to inform our estimates of supply capacity. So I don't even have time to mention global risks or what's going on there, but suffice to say we continue to assess that risks to the global economy are tilted to the downside. And just before I finish, as usual in doing this, we'll be closely monitoring the incoming data, as always, to assess how the economy evolves relative to our forecasts and the risks. This includes tomorrow's official CPI data for January, and given today's audience of fellow forecasters, I thought it's just a good time to reiterate our approach to the new monthly CPI data and talk through our plan from here. So, as we said before, the RBA, we very much welcome the introduction of a complete monthly CPI, as more frequent and more complete data has material benefits for the timeliness of our read on inflation. Now, the monthly CPI, that is, you know, now Australia's primary measure of headline inflation and the benchmark variable for the inflation target. So, you know, some people sort of suggested maybe we aren't using it that much. Well, it's our benchmark variable, so it's super important for us. Now, as with anything new, it's going to take us time to understand the properties, and you know, particularly at the seasonal patterns of the new monthly data. Right? We don't have a long history for some of these things. So while we learn about the monthly data, for a time we're just going to continue focusing on the quarterly data, basically for inflation, for forecasting, and also for assessing underlying inflationary pressures. So that's just through this transition period. While we learn about the new monthly data, we're going to keep focusing on the quarterly stuff for a while. So you can see that in our February forecast. We continue to forecast quarterly trim mean measure inflation. But we are using the monthly stuff as well, right? You know, We've been analysing, so we use it to sort of inform what's going on in the very near term to see if, you know, it'll be super useful, for example, to think for some of these things that we think where inflationary pressures might come off in the near term, we'll get early reads on whether that's happening or not. That would be super helpful for us. But also, we've been analysing underlying inflation measures constructed using the monthly data. Now, we haven't put anything out on this yet because it's just too early, right? But as more monthly data become available, eventually we'll aim to assess which underlying inflation measures from the monthly data that will be the preferred ones in a post-quarterly CPI world. So during this transition period, we're looking to understand the properties of monthly measures, including signs of underlying measures that we're looking at. So we're looking for signs of bias, differences in seasonal patterns, responsiveness to changes in economic conditions, and basically its effectiveness as a leading indicator for headline inflation. So that's all some way off, but our intention is to engage widely and communicate our thinking ahead of any decisions. So thank you. Happy to take some questions. Bess has told me I've got two minutes. Two questions, righto. Yeah, let's go.
Hi, Michael. I want to ask a question about your chart with capacity utilization, because it seems the RBA quite like that measure lately. You do quote that a few times in your speech. Mm-hmm. Can you go back to the chart?
I'm coming.
Just historically, looking at the chart, I always thought that the capacity utilization series seems to be negatively correlated with trimmed mean inflation. But you do say that, you know, the series does seems to indicate that utilization seems elevated. What do you think about that negative correlation historically?
Yeah,
and so also from the same NAP survey monthly, all the other indicators like output prices are actually trending down as well.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So I think we think it is, it depends on the circumstances and the nature of the shock is how I would answer that. So if you look at back through that period, like through the, where it looks to be sort of inverse, whatever, through the 2010s and stuff, that's the mining boom, okay? So this is non-mining capacity utilization. So what we knew had to happen during that period when things were going gangbusters in the mining industry, the exchange rate appreciated by a lot, right? And that sort of dampened conditions in the non-mining part of the economy. And so I think that says something here. So the inflationary pressures, I think, were coming from what was going on in things related to the mining boom. So you saw sort of disinflationary sort of type pressures happening in the non-mining part of the economy. So that's like a really interesting period there where the exchange rate did a lot and one particular sector was doing a lot. Here now we think we're in a period where, until very recently, the exchange rate hasn't done a lot, and it's really the main story's been about sort of, you know, capacity pressures, and I think that's why that aligns. So it's just really carefully thinking about when you think it's the nature of the shock matters, I think.
Good morning. Thank you for your speech. It was great speech. I was just wondering, I was just very curious, I'm also an astute graph reader, and I thought it was interesting that the public demand growth was slightly less than expected, and there's been a lot of conversation around too much government spending or government regulation contributing to inflation. But my question is more tangential to that. It's how much of that pickup in private sector demand do you think was driven by the public sector as opposed to lower interest rates?
That's an interesting question, Tapas, and I don't have an answer for it off the top of my head to even think how to. So your question is, to what extent was it the public spending supporting the private sector as opposed to the reduction in interest rates? It depends what period you're talking about. So the reductions in interest rates through 2025, I mean, we could see the impacts of those coming through in the housing market, in the more interest sensitive, but we probably hadn't, it's probably a bit too early to have seen much of an impact, I think, in other parts of the economy. So to that extent, we probably really weren't thinking that the reductions in the cash rate, had things not changed, we probably thought that we'd start to see the bigger impacts of those through this year. So monetary easing in 2025, you could see the effects in the housing market, but was probably too early to see much in other parts of the economy. So that was other forces happening then. Now, one of those forces was public spending, But there are other things going on as well. The recovery in real household incomes, for example, you know, from earlier from the, you know, the stage three tax cuts, you know, that as inflation was coming down, increased purchasing power. So there's a whole bunch of other things going on there as well.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.